Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Global Digest, the Global Digest, a show that basically looks at the conversation that has been taking place during the past week and during this week, building up to this week. And of course, one of the things that we will be looking at is a promise that we made last week that we'll be looking at what has been happening in Haiti and the Kenyan contribution to that conversation. The other topic is on the National Dialogue Committee report. We'll be looking at some of the issues that we would have loved to see on that report, but are not there. But also, we'll be looking at what members of parliament will be discussing in regards to the same report. Joining me today, of course, is a welcome back to Davis Ayega. Karibu, Davis. And of course, our very famous gracious lady, Irene Mwangi.
Thank you. Thank you, Lava.
Yes. And of course, I keep getting this wrong because I keep calling you an analyst, but you keep correcting me.
I am a policy analyst.
But there's another terminology you always use.
Strategies. There's many things. I'm an activist as well.
There you go. So yeah. strategist, activist,
it's a long CV.
Analyst, yeah.
Yes.
And a long CV. Now I'll just...
Thank you.
Yes, of course, if you have not recognized the voice just yet, it is Benji Ndolo making a comeback because we promised that we are going to talk about Haiti.
Yes,
but that is in the next segment.
Yeah, but allow me to just say that it's absolutely always a pleasure to come back, and I'm really very indebted to you guys for having me. I just love radio, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah,
thanks,
Asante, for making time to also be here.
My pleasure.
Irene Davis, opening remarks. How was your weekend? None of you is a Manchester United. Oh, Davis is a Manchester United fan, so yeah, he's kind of he's in seventh heaven still.
I let Davis start.
Mine was already was okay, Irene. Martin has been having a field day because Manchester United got a better one over Liverpool.
Yeah.
But more importantly, as we look forward to the week, President William Ruto is going to sign the Affordable Housing Bill 2023 tomorrow.
24.
So I think it's going to be a busy week, especially from now the reactions that will come out from the signing of that bill into law, considering the NADCO report, which we are going to talk about, the issues of the high cost of living featured dominantly on that report. So I think this will be a discussion that Kenyans will be interested in, and the political class as well.
Okay. Irene?
It was a good weekend, interesting weekend. What stood out is the people heckling the president at functions, especially in areas that are regarded to be the political bastion for President William Ruto. Amazing that the Interior Cabinet Secretary has to be in Kericho by 5 a.m. in the morning to deal with those hecklers. I mean, what was the issue there that you're having a whole CS fly to Kericho at 5 a.m. in the morning to deal with hecklers? What's not happening? Why are we having that turmoil in that region of the country? So that was what the weekend was in a nutshell.
Okay, thank you very much, Irene, Davis, and Benji. Benji, you already had your opening remarks.
No, I must confess that I'm liking Irene more and more with every show. I mean, seriously, she's right on topic and really on most of the issues, just spot on. Heckling, we are in a democracy. It's so spontaneous. It is so intense and so real. Right now, we are completely in the middle of a broken economy. Yes, there's some progress, having had the shilling strengthening in the last few weeks, as well as fuel reducing, though it hasn't reduced enough, but we are on the right track. But honestly, to send a CS or security agents is beyond ridiculous. People have a right. It is only decent in a democracy to express their displeasure, to express their disappointment and their disgust. And that is not something that must be legislated or legally enforced against. To do so would be intolerance. And so, Irene, well done.
Thank you.
Okay, speaking about democracy, it's very rare that you actually see Irene acknowledging a compliment, but it's okay. Speaking of democracy, and it's where we start our conversation today, in the sense that we are having this conversation around the National Dialogue Committee report. The National Dialogue Committee report in itself, the National Dialogue Committee has been looked at as an item that is not really pro-democracy. It is something that is going outside of the way. You're going through the back door to sort out a problem that ideally should have been sorted out either by parliament or by institutions that have the mandate to deal with it. When you talk about democracy and people booing the governors and other elected leaders, how does this conversation then settle in when after every election we keep getting a bypass to come and fix something that ordinarily, if we came to parliament, we would have to address it?
So first of all, I think it would be prudent to open this whole discussion this evening with perhaps because there's been an attempt to paint these hecklers as hooligans. Okay. I think it would be only fair to say that as much as things are bad, there are governors that are popular. Mm-hmm. In Makueni, the governor is seemingly on the job and doing a good job. The best governor, it appears so far, would be surprisingly in Homa Bay. Gladys Wanga is paying doctors, public servants, public officials, starting projects. And basically the county, from what I hear, is catching up from lost time in the decade lost under Cyprian Awiti. And so this just goes to show that there is complete disaffection on the ground, especially because of cost of living and also just misrule or bad governance. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you can wish away. It's not something that you can kind of legislate away. It's not something you can... It reflects also in NADCO. And in fact, something that we were saying, Irene, yesterday on social media, as much as these booing and whatnot, Laban, is against a governor, against a senator, etc., to me, it's a subtle message, actually, to the head of state. And that is... I mean, it's him that the message ultimately is aimed towards. It's William Ruto that is running the entire government, the administration, mm-hmm. and because he's the head of state, people are not yet at the point where they want to shout and yell at him. So they're kind of using these governors of his as proxies, but ultimately it's a veiled message to him, and so. The reality of a bad economy, the reality of a high cost of living, the scandals such as, for instance, fertilizer, sand being sold as fertilizer to the detriment of farmers, as unbelievable as that is, mm-hmm. Those are not things that we can, in a democracy, just solve by saying, don't talk about it on radio, or don't shout at, because I saw the president saying, why don't you just wait until 2027? That I was very surprised because Ruto is smarter than that. You do not park anger and say, I will mourn another day. Mm-hmm. You mourn when the shoe is pinching the most, mm-hmm. is when you yell the loudest.
Okay, so that's the reason why I'm asking, Davis and Irene, is it proper that every time we feel the shoe is pinching, instead of just removing the shoe, we scatter around the issue and then finally come to the idea of, oh, let's just remove the shoe? Because what we are, Benji has touched on the issue of cost of living, the issue of, in a way, the issue of electoral reforms, the issue of accountability, yes? And all of those issues have been addressed in NADCO, but those very issues could have easily been addressed through the executive and through parliament.
I think to answer your question best, it has become part of the norm because now Kenya, it appears, we've become synonymous with the establishment of committees or bodies that are mandated to look at some of the issues that get to pop up during every electioneering period in the country. In the last election, there was for the former president Uhuru Kenyatta's, before he exited the office, there were recommendations that on some of the things that Kenya needed to look at the time. When you look at the NADCO report came about after the 2022 election, primarily to cure some of the issues that majorly the opposition had raised, the issues of the high cost of living, the issues of auditing the election to ensure that successive elections get to be more transparent, issues of accountability. As presently things stand, there is sufficient goodwill to implement some of the things that have been raised in the report, key among them the high cost of living, which is really a major issue that must be addressed by this regime. So I think even as members of parliament prepare to debate on this report, it is very important for them to keep in mind the needs of Kenyans, to prioritize on some of the things really that affect Kenyans directly. As much as it appears that after every election we get to have different kinds of reports, but now this time around they need to do better. They need to ensure that some of the recommendations touching on the issues that are contained in that report are implemented going forward.
I think when you look at the process right now that is happening in Parliament, with both members of the National Assembly and the senators being given 45 days, when you look at the 9 bills that they're considering, it's all about creating political sanity in terms of putting in place the office of the Prime Minister, the office of the Prime Cabinet Secretary, and expanding the selection panel when it comes to IEBC. So the issues that are there is about politicians and the political sanity after every election. But when you look at what is happening on ground, the issue of high cost of living was not addressed in the NADCO report. The issue was shelved to be talked about by the two leaders, that is President William Ruto and opposition leader Raila Odinga. Now, why people are heckling the president is because the leaders they elected to represent them in the legislative house have turned out to be sycophants. They are not really putting out the issues of the common mwananchi. So what is the common mwananchi left with? Is to communicate in public rallies, because that is the only channel. The only chance they can get to tell the president, by the way, this is not how things should be going. And therefore, the president should not be agitated that people are heckling him. And they've been quite consistent. And it is quite ironical that it is in his political backyard. So you can't say that they are being, you know, incited by his political detractors. Yes. So
just on that point, yes, in the sense you have said, the MPs are not delivering.
Yes.
They are not representing the people effectively.
Yeah.
But every time that there is a big issue that's supposed to come out, the members of parliament, especially from UDA, never actually make statements that go or represent what the people on the ground are saying. Case in point, when KRA officers went to Moranga and attempted to do a civic education on why people should enlist on teams, and they were just told, no, we don't want this. And among the people who were trying to chase away the KRA people were members of parliament. And the KRA officials stand on them and ask them, but you are the guys who passed this thing.
So I,
the only thing, the only defense they had was,
we didn't know what it meant.
See?
So why are you taking your anger out of out on the president when Honorable Irene is the one who messed up?
Now, according to our democracy, the process of recalling a member of parliament, you and I know, it's a tedious process. And for a common mwananchi to start the process and actually be successful, it will take a long time. And these are the issues, as Benji has said, these are the issues facing us right now. If it's the high cost of living, I can't embark on a process that will take me 2 years for this situation to be sorted out. And that is why we are heckling the president, or we are causing the acrimony in whatever he is, to send a statement. I will point an example of the affordable housing. Each and every stakeholder said that we don't want this tax at this moment, including the employers, including the common mwananchi. But what will the MPs do? they will pass this as if there was no public participation at all.
Exactly.
At
they
all.
They followed what they were told by their party leader.
Yeah.
Who is who?
Which is what I'm calling sycophancy. So the electorate is saying, okay, so me, I elected MP so-and-so to go and put out my grievances. And now he's following the president or whatever the political party is saying. Mm-hmm. When the president comes here, we'll make sure we have sent a statement. Whether he's angry or not, at least we'll have sent that particular statement.
The only problem
I know it will appear shabbily done or not
diplomatically.
Yeah, a diplomatic way of doing things or a neat process of doing things. Mm-hmm. But looking at the way our democracy is, that is the only way we can communicate to the president.
Binji, before you get in, the only problem I have with that whole argument that Irene and yourself are trying to put across is when that heckling is coming out, it's coming out as if we are heckling Governor Benji and County Women Rep Irene.
Mm-hmm.
We are not heckling President Davis, no. But our issue is really with Davis.
But actually, the reason the president is getting mad is because he's not a novice in politics. So he is understanding that while you are heckling Governor Bachok, it is really him that the message is going to. And it is no surprise. This began with the guy who was trying to add fuel prices when fuel was already a mess. That is Chirchir, mm-hmm. in front of the president. It continued to Murkomen. These are CSs close to the president, handpicked by himself. It can be no coincidence that at home there's a problem. And in fact, allow me to take this a step further from where Irene left it. Using the president's own words and ideology, because for the first time in the 2022 campaign, we moved away from tribal formations, and UDA tried quite successfully to frame the debate around issues, around, for instance, who is a hustler? Who is Mama Mboga? Who is a Boda Boda guy? Who is a maize roaster? Who is a hawker? All right? Mm. And the president, the DP then, explained around the country that we've had a fallacy where we do elections and then mabwenyenye wanaketi chini and they look for positions for themselves. They say, let's create the position of a prime minister. Let us create the position of this. Let us create an office for official opposition. Let us fund that office. Mm-hmm. Let's give them cars, etc. And for the first time, I'm saying, let us create an opportunity and prioritize Mama Mboga. Mm-hmm. Now, the president, not myself, is undoing his own script. And might I highlight, Laban, that the president's critics like to brand him a liar. It is a very troubling label to put on a head of state. It is very problematic that a lot of Kenyans would think that the president is a liar. And therefore, he must move away from the direction that would give any evidence that he is actually not interested in whatever ideals he was talking about as a hustler president, and that he's more and enslaved to special interests. And so the thing of an official opposition in NADCO, the thing of a prime minister, I'm surprised the media is not saying this more. Mm-hmm. These are all not constitutional. You see, we have a constitution.
But that's why in NADCO report, they're actually proposing
amendments, a referendum.
Mm. Amendments to legal amendments to the law.
No, they would need a referendum. They would need a referendum. Not backdoor amendments, such as how Duale used to try to do in the past. Not backdoor amendments.
Exactly.
And so
and
I think it's important to say
that. We agree on one thing.
Yes.
That there is a conversation on which way will we go.
Mm.
Will we go referendum? Will we go through parliamentary initiative?
Now, let me just say something that will sound a bit idealistic,
mm-hmm.
Because even from the feedback I'm getting here on both on Twitter, called X now, and WhatsApp,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of people listening. One of the I've watched governments struggle. I've watched Uhuru struggle as a president. That's a fact. I mean, through COVID, through Eurobond and all these things. Mm-hmm. And we all agree that this 1.5 years have been very tough for Ruto. In every, the dollar, the works. I mean, look at Nakumicha, for example. It is just today she seems to be finding her way, but she's a lost girl.
I mean, how do you with so much arrogance say, I know the doctors want money. I can't do anything. I don't have money. You're a CS. You've given up. Why are you there? If you task me to pay Davis and the guys here as chairman or as president, how can I be in the seat and I can't sort Kina Davis? That's not leadership. And so let me just say that one of the things that we all have to agree is that in this struggle, the solution lies in following the constitution. The solution does not lie in cutting backroom deals with Raila. I know there is a propensity towards that in the real politics sense, that what can we do? How can we bribe, you know, because he has a lot of following. How can we, if the president, just as much as he didn't like the constitution, the 2010 constitution, it's the one we have. If he just implements a constitution to the extent of independent offices, constitutional commissions, Article 10, Chapter 6, if he dares do that, it will be 100 steps forward as far as sorting out the governance issue. But to the extent that you're trying to run, you know, things in a manner that has no fiscal responsibility and fiscal prudence, you're renovating State House, you're traveling all over the place, you're buying new choppers and what have you, and people on the ground cannot buy fertilizer, cannot buy beans, cannot buy unga even as it's coming down, you obviously have a problem and you don't need Benji Ndola to tell you that.
Okay, on that note, I don't need Benji Ndola to tell me that I need to go to a commercial break, but I have to go for a commercial break. And welcome back to Global Digest with myself, Laban, Davis Ayaga, Irene Mwangi, and of course, Benji Ndolo. Today we are discussing, the conversation is really around the NADCO report, the National Dialogue Committee report. This particular report stems out of the protests that we had last year in 2023, whereby the Azimio coalition, which is in the minority, were basically raising issues to do with the cost of living, with electoral reforms, and other fidelity to the political parties and stuff like that. And they wanted an impartial way for it to be looked at. And through certain conversations that were held together with other people from outside of the country, we ended up on this platform. And now we have a report that is in parliament that should be discussed and all of that. But one of the things that keeps coming out is on the issue of checks and balances. And whenever you mention checks and balances, two things usually come up: parliament, political parties, and of course, the Office of the Auditor General. I don't know, one of you, one of my panel, from Benji to Irene to Davis, one of the things that usually comes out is whenever the Auditor General usually comes out and says, we need more officials so that we can keep the counties in check, we can keep the national government in check. Strangely enough, when they mentioned the issue of checks and balances, the thing that just came out was, and this is a recommendation from the report, that the committee recommends compliance with court orders by state and public officers and harmonizing of bicameral relations between the houses of parliament. Nothing about the Auditor General.
Or so
even the control of budget.
I feel obligated to speak on this because I have worked for the Office of the Auditor General as a policy consultant under the World Bank. So I'm very privy to a lot of things at the Office of the Auditor General. And one of the troubling things for me, just given the kind of work that I've done over all these years since I left Capital and now, you know, back, you'll be surprised to know, and some of you have covered this and know that Eurobond was very problematic. The 2014 Eurobond, a lot of the back and forth, etc., under President Uhuru. The NADCO report actually has a section on the fact that the former Auditor General, who did an excellent job, Eddie Ooko, actually left without pension. In, you know, the kind of vindictiveness, you know, where for instance, we just came from campaigns, and you know, once you know the president is angry or whatever, they pull your security. You know, you find that your security has been withdrawn, you know, that kind of thing. And so, in line with that kind of mentality, the Office of the Auditor General has continued to suffer a lot of marginalization, a lot of attacks, a lot of threats, you know, that we need to close this office, we need to defund this office, underfund this office. This office is embarrassing the presidency. This office is exposing spending, expenditure, and what have you. I've heard that from Kimani Ichung'wah and others before that, Duale. And so, again, as I said, you know, a constitutional office under Article 229, 227, the other day, Controller of Budget, I think, got arrested for, I can't remember. She was explaining big things in her office, and then they say she didn't sign something, and then she's arraigned in court. I mean, that kind of overt. And even...
Benji, could I just ask you to hold on to that thought, sure, so that Davis can do the 7 o'clock bulletin, and then we'll come back picking up from the point where you're making about the Controller of Budget and the Auditor General.
The Auditor General.
Yes, Davis, it's 7:01 on Capital FM. And welcome back to Global Digest. Thank you, Davis, for the news. Benji, before we went for the break, you were telling us about the challenges that the Controller of Budget and the Office of the Auditor General, where you had a stint, were facing.
Yeah, I had a 5.5-year stint there. And just for the information of Kenyans, once again, we used to have what you call Controller and Auditor General. I'm sure someone like Laban understands that. Then the Constitution 2010 then broke that office into two, yeah, for accountability purposes, so that you have a Controller of Budget that handles and actually controls the budget, which isn't really the case because the current Controller of Budget is in Treasury, an ODT, as kind of a department. So they kind of just resisted having a fully fledged Controller of Budget. And then you have the Auditor General. I just want to wrap this argument, but why this is important, Laban and my colleagues, is for two reasons. One, with the kind of looting that we have seen over the last 10 years, and especially over the last 10 years, you stand a very big risk of running this country into the ground if you don't have an independent, capable, competent, mobilized Auditor General. Mm-hmm. You have too many projects, you have many governments now with the counties, etc. So you can have all manner of... The looting would be worse if you don't have a competent Auditor General. That's number one. Number two, you know, by squeezing and shrinking the independent offices, by shrinking the Controller of Budget and the Auditor General, you're actually overthrowing the Constitution. So it's like if here at Capital we have different departments, you have finance, etc., and we just sit with Davis and we say, you know what? We are going to incur expenditure. We will not get approvals from the CFO. We will not submit. We are going to almost run a parallel radio station. That is because we always have talk about governance, Laban. For a government to have its honor and credibility and standing, mm-hmm, a government must from the beginning be seen to appreciate the Constitution, to implement and to respect. And in fact, that is Article 3.1. Every Kenyan must respect and uphold the Constitution. So we don't do some of these things because we like it. It is the law. It is the law of the land, followed by subsidiary legislation. So who am I as Benji, as a CS or as a president, to say, you know, apana pe hawa tu pesa, let Irene go, that ametuchokesha, we don't want to hear. This is the culture that we must undo. And it starts with all the advocacy, including in the media.
Okay, thank you. Irene, you have the advantage of you cover parliamentary watchdog committees. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you interact with is the Auditor General's reports. And also sometimes you have the pleasure of seeing county chiefs and even national government officials coming before parliamentary committees to defend whatever they have whatever they are being accused of, audit queries and stuff like that. Do you usually feel what Benji is saying, that probably they are not delivering their best work yet?
The members of parliament?
The office of the auditor general first, and then the members of parliament.
I think from the point of the OAG has a lot to do in terms of auditing the MDAs and also the devolved units, looking at the staff that they have currently. Mm. Indeed, they're facing a lot of financial hiccups that will hinder their delivery. But be that as it may, I will say that they have really tried to do their best with what they have, given that they've been able to expose some of these big embezzlement of funds in the counties, even as they're constrained on funds, which sometimes appears to be intentional. I think the only gap, which I think the OAG has complained before, is the members of parliament not carrying or not executing, ensuring the execution of the reports due to political interest. Mm-hmm. Because again, the MPs are aligned to either political faction. If, for example, you will say Kajwang is, not use Kajwang, maybe a member of parliament is sitting at the park committee and he's auditing the reports for a member of parliament, for a governor in their own political party, political interest will interfere with that. Mm-hmm. But the issues of funding and also the threats that, you know, the COB has been facing currently. I mean, an issue that happened, I think, 6 years ago, mm-hmm. only for it to erupt because the COB is saying that what President William Ruto said on cost cutting measures on state travels was not the factual truth. In fact, they have traveled more than the previous regime in the same period of time. So. Again, I'm not sure how this NADCO, the committee, the Joint Jail Justice and Legal Affairs Committee, will do in terms of ensuring the independent offices are really given the resources they require, given that, again, this regime has been touted as, I don't want to say they're dictators, but you can see how they're handling the independent institutions. And so I think it will be a litmus test to the members of parliament to see whether indeed they'll uphold the rule of law in terms of ensuring that independent offices are given the resources and the support that is required, mm-hmm. to be able to execute the mandate.
Davis, one of the things that the previous government kind of came in with, a statement that they used to make, was state capture, a term that is used to basically show that the executive is kind of pressing other institutions, other arms of government, to do exactly what it wants. We've seen that allegation being almost pushed through the judiciary until a meeting took place and everything changed. Now we have another conversation with members of parliament, political parties, and now we're having the auditor general also being roped into. How do you ensure the independence of this institution, key institutions?
I think on this one, the members of parliament have a huge role to play in ensuring that some of these independent officers are safeguarded and guaranteed, especially when it comes to funding. Because President William Ruto, when he came into office, was very vocal and big on ensuring that he will ensure there is independence of these officers. So when it comes to the debate of this report, I think the members of parliament, they need to be now the responsible leaders that they ought to be in ensuring that they commit to some of the recommendations that were made in the NADCO report. Because when you look at the report, there is a recommendation under the audit of under financing and ensuring the independence of these public offices. They recommended that they should be properly funded to ensure that they get to perform their duties effectively. So I think when members of parliament retreat and when they will begin to debate on this report, mm-hmm. it will be very important for them to ensure that some of these recommendations really get to pass.
But we started this conversation
not just on paper.
We started this conversation with members of parliament are not doing their job. That is why the president can't address a rally. Now they you're telling me the members of parliament are the ones we should rely on now to ensure this guy, the independent bodies, actually...
But the president does not make laws.
You know, it's increasingly dawning to many of them that as much as, yes, the executive, especially those drawn from the majority side of parliament, from the ruling party, it is increasingly dawning on them that sometimes what we are told to pass does not favor the people on the ground. And we have seen this, and this can be tied to the heckling that we've seen in some of these regions that the president has been touring. So to avoid such scenarios, I think members of parliament will have to make their decisions known so that when they go back to face the electorate, they need to make their positions known so that they avoid to be heckled. But even as they prepare to discuss, to debate this report, I think in ensuring that there is proper governance, there is proper administration of justice to the people of Kenya, they need to commit to the recommendations clearly, because now there is sufficient goodwill now that even the opposition leader, Raila Odinga, who initiated this whole discussion, we've seen the issue of the two-thirds gender bill. Already, the members of parliament, there is sufficient goodwill to ensure that going forward, we get to involve and empower women in discussion in the political arena. So I think now it's incumbent upon the members of parliament to really set themselves apart as much as, yes, those in the majority side are being told to do some of the things, because clearly, since when parliament opened up to date, when you hear some members of parliament speak during public forums or during interviews, you'd be surprised that some of them are passing these laws without even reading the bills. We've seen this in the Affordable Housing Bill 2023. We've seen this in the finance bill. That even it has become to an extent whereby public participation has become a cosmetic exercise. The members of parliament are being told by their electorate, do not do one, two, and three. But these are the same members of parliament who, when they go on the floor of the house, they get to do the exact opposite thing. So I think going forward, they need to be very careful in regards to how they do the messaging and handle themselves, because their number one priority when they were elected to go is representation. They need to represent the people's needs and thoughts.
Okay, I think on this issue of...
So that we can move on also to
this
the
issue of
Kenya-Haiti relations.
Strengthening the independent offices. I doubt anything conclusive will come out from the members of parliament considering the NADCO report. What I'm saying so is even the judiciary fund, when we had the courts give ruling that were unpopular to the president, the next thing you'll hear is MPs say, in fact, that judiciary fund, cut it, give us that money, we construct roads. You see? That you're using it as a bait. And you see, you can't feed a snake that will ultimately bite you. From where this government is sitting, if we fund the Auditor General and the Controller Budget, finally they will expose us. So why continue to feed them, and ultimately it will be to our own detriment?
I wait to see that. I think this is why now we need the opposition even more. We need their presence. We need
to
hear their voices.
True.
And that can only be made possible provided that the pact... The need to have Raila Odinga sent to the AU position, if the opposition was compromised, then we stand a higher chance of not being defended as the citizens of this country. The opposition will go mute on some of these discussions, on ensuring that these offices need to be funded, these offices, their mandate needs to be protected. But if they were not compromised, then definitely we are going to see a heat.
Maybe as a parting shot.
Benji, as you're actually making your... I think the biggest question in the room is, who is the boss? Who is the boss between the president and the electorate?
It should be the electorate, but Irene has just pointed out, you know, when she says, MPs say, you know, if we fund this, they'll come back to expose us. That presupposes that you are there in the first place to steal. So that's a really broken system. That's a very toxic system. I was just going to part on this particular Kenyan topic by saying it is really painful for me as an analyst and as an observer to see someone like Raila tarmacking at age 80, because that's what he's doing. I mean, like, very aggressively looking for a job. Fine, let me just allow him to do that. But secondly, that this job would mean shirking his responsibilities as opposition leader. I don't know that I could be able myself, if I had the opportunity and the following, mm-hmm. to take that trade-off. That I'm going to go slow on checking the government so I can get something for myself.
But Benji...
It must be said.
But Benji, Raila Odinga is... He's just one person.
He's the head. He's the head of the opposition.
He's not the only one who's feeling the pinch. He's not the only one who's feeling the pinch of cost of living. He's not the only one.
But who can conclusively send a message to President William Ruto apart from Raila Odinga?
He's the head.
He's only the following.
How many people turned out for the maandamano? How many people?
Maybe
even
a million.
Even in the days that the former prime minister did not show up for the 3 days.
He's one who called him. He's one who called it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
For his own safety.
What ended up? Whatever ended up is as a result
Laban,
of
no question about it. Raila received more than 6 million votes.
Yes.
It's only 6 million votes. It's his position. So again, to just leave it is very problematic, and it must be said.
Azimio Coalition,
it must be said.
I'm sorry, Azimio Coalition has other leaders. Yes, Azimio Coalition has other leaders in Parliament. In Parliament, Azimio Coalition has a leader of minority, has a deputy leader of minority, has people who can do something in Parliament.
Laban, no. We used to talk of two horses. We used to talk of two horses.
Can you agree? Kalonzo Musyoka is not coming close.
Yes, exactly.
It's only
not yet.
Odinga.
Not yet. Yes.
Can we agree this is a conversation that will probably need
a boxing ring.
Another mediator. or another mediator, because I don't think we are going to agree on whether or not Raila Odinga
let's go to Haiti.
Is the one who's supposed to lead this push towards the cost of living. But the other issue that has kept coming up, of course, is Kenya's involvement with the situation in Haiti. Up until I think last week, we were on the trajectory that Kenya will be sending its police officers to Haiti until there was what I would call a coup, and a rebel leader decided, or a gang leader as the Western media call him, decided to take power and threaten that if a prime minister returns to the country, he will execute a civil war. I think that is where we were supposed to start this question.
Correct. And that's actually where I came back.
This conversation from.
And that's also why I came back.
So far, a lot of things have changed.
Yes.
But I think we can just start it from there and work our way in.
So it was only fair with the kind of following that Capital has, with the kind of following that I have, that I just do very basic, very rudimentary research before coming in to discuss Haiti. Why? Because there's been an understandable impetus on the part of government of Kenya. Like, despite all odds. In fact, I saw the former Chief Justice saying that he's receiving information that... Yeah,
this is Dr. William Tuna.
Okay. And so this is a retired state officer actually receiving a pension and security from the state. So I would be foolish to not follow something that he says that is apparently also well-researched. So I did very preliminary research and realized something, two things. And before I go there, let me also just say that the interior CS, my friend Kindiki, said, you know, we had a small case on this matter, and he's a lawyer himself, and we've dispensed with that small matter. And so it's like, come hell or high water, we must put our police on. And Kenyans are saying, wait a minute, this place, the EU is fleeing, the US embassy is closing, they're extracting American citizens, they're not willing to put in troops. Why sacrifice Kenyans?
So why is our president so invested?
I actually went and did the numbers.
Right.
The Department of Defense is offering, and I've done the conversion.
That is for which country?
For this mission.
No, which country? Department of Defense.
Sorry, Department of Defense, US. I'm sorry. Yeah. US Department of Defense is offering for this mission. I even did the numbers. 28 billion shillings, 200 million. The State Department of the US as well is also offering on this mission 14 billion 100 million shillings. Now, if you just do that math, that is right there about some 50 billion Kenya shillings, give and take. Now, given the realities of what Africa is, we're on a political show. By Africa, I mean Ghana, Nigeria, Tanzania, Uganda, Sudan, Kenya, etc. You cannot tell me that of the different funding that will come into this thing, you cannot tell me that these... We live in a corrupt country where corruption is the reality and the headline and the story. When you talk about immigration, when you talk about passports, when you talk about border, when you talk about Eurobond, when you talk about Goldenberg, you cannot tell me that for these resources and the crazy interest with which the leadership is just pushing this thing down the throats of Kenyans, you cannot tell me that there is nothing in it for the decision makers in this. And so once I did that research, I said I'll not even really go further, because it's my obligation, if I'm going to be on the airwaves, to help Kenyans think. They're educated Kenyans listening to the show. And they're like, Benji, Davis, Irene, why must we by force? Because the gangs went to the airport and said the prime minister will not land. Mm-hmm. Then President Ruto said, oh, you know, Blinken called me. I'm just quoting the president. I read the paper yesterday. Blinken called me after a few hours and he said, yeah, I know it's problematic, but the deal is still on. I rest my case.
Davis, Irene, we bring this back home. The conversation should ideally be also in Parliament. Like, we need to know the reciprocal agreement. What is entailed in that agreement?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think this whole issue of Haiti has really exposed us as a nation, because the question that continues to beg is, where are our priorities? Because back home here, we are dealing with bandits. But we are so hell-bent, like Benji has intimated, of sending 1,000 of our capable police officers to a country that is much troubled by gang violence, to the point where the Prime Minister had to resign. He had to succumb to the gangs there. So I think it's a question of priorities, and I think... Back to members of parliament, these are the same people who are supposed to be the voices of the representatives who sent them to parliament to speak on these issues, to question power as to why really we get to approve sending 1,000 police officers to a country that already is. I remember there's a time you clarified when you were with Makbul, it's not a failed state yet, but it's on that path. So I think it's a question of priorities. The government really needs to, first of all, explain to the people really why we as Kenya, we are trying to ensure that this mission gets to be actualized. Yet, like Benji has mentioned, the US is already closing its embassy. It's already extracting its citizens. People are fleeing from that country. But us, we are really helping to go there. So it's a question of ensuring that members of the public get to know the details of this reciprocal agreement, and what we gain to stand. Are there people who are going to benefit? What guarantees are those 1,000 police officers, what guarantees will they be given that once you go to Haiti, you'll come back home alive?
I will take the opportunity to thank members of parliament, especially from the opposition end, because they were very vocal on this particular issue, saying in the first place, the issue did not require parliamentary approval for the police to be sent, okay? And also to thank the activists, because of that case that dragged for the considerable amount of time, we have found ourselves in this situation that the Prime Minister, the Haiti Prime Minister, cannot, you know, land back to the country, and therefore we cannot sign an agreement if at all the Prime Minister is not even in a position to lead the country, courtesy of the coup that happened there. And the President was quite adamant that come rain or shine, this agreement will sail through and we'll follow the court directions that said that we need to have an agreement between Kenya and Haiti for these police troops to be sent there, and look at what has happened. And it all boils down to money. I think that's what the President William Ruto's regime has not been vocal to say, that indeed this issue was all about the money. It was nothing else, because even some of the police officers were complaining that they were not quite ready. Remember, this is a French-speaking country. Of course, preparations were done, but within 3 months, going to a country where people are speaking in French and you're going into a war zone, you can imagine. And therefore, our police officers are being used as pawns in that particular agreement, only for them to go and, you know, die there. And that there was no other African country apart from Burundi and I think
Benin
that responded to it. And given that here in the country we're not really doing the best in terms of security, I mean, we have had the issues of banditry that, like Davis has mentioned. So I think the lack of transparency in this particular deal has led to what we're having currently.
She said French, and my here, a cop stopped me and said, "Wega gari gando." So you just wonder, how is this going to work?
Don't worry. As our police officers, by the way, from what I hear, they are highly ranked by the UN and other international bodies. But one of the things that keeps coming up is that context of accountability. And the question that people keep asking is, why wouldn't US President Biden step up and send his troops there? Mm-hmm. And that is the reason that he will need to be accountable for that action.
Of course.
Now, does that mean that in Kenya, in Benin, in Burundi, they don't have accountability measures?
Yeah, life is cheap. Life is cheap. The social construct is such that the president is almost above the law. I mean, look at how much Biden, and I support Biden, I like Biden, and I've known Biden and liked Biden for many, many years. But just look at the price that the president of the US is paying now with the disaster in Gaza. You know, he hasn't been able to curb a tough position like his predecessor, his former boss Barack Obama did with Netanyahu, who the youth in Israel want out of office because of the level of chaos, the blood, the loss of blood, the bombing of hospitals and whatnot. And so, you know, Biden just putting in troops into Haiti could just well be like the last nail on his political coffin. And so accountability there is much more sophisticated and much more tangible. I've just received some information here, by the way, on Trump's case, the New York case, $464 million. He has sought bond from about 30 sources and all have declined. I mean, Davis, you can do the math. We talked about 28 billion here. It's like unbelievable money. Are you kidding me?
Okay. And yeah, with that tip from Benji, unfortunately, we have to come to an end.
Exactly.
Thanks, Benji.
Just to say thank you for having me again. We must do this again. Yeah. So I'll just be waiting for you guys to order me around. Like, Benji, be here tonight. Yeah. Let's have this conversation. Yeah. God bless everybody. Thank you so much.
Many thanks, Santi. Benji, Irene, Davis. And of course, we keep an eye on the Haiti story in the sense that there's supposed to be a transitional presidential council that will be in place, and that might actually have an impact as to this conversation that we are having here in Kenya as to how our police officers might be deployed in Haiti. But for us from the Global Digest, it is good night, God bless, and thank you for listening.